to another episode of Records Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the magic of music. I'm your DJ, your MC, host on the East Coast, and Ben Montgomery. My co-host from the left coast, Wayne Fugate, he's in Mexico, hopefully getting some skin and boning. So we're once again joined by the man who is here for another round. It's times like these we learn to record again. Welcome back, Jeff Frame.
I'm back. I miss you, Wayne. But I'll do my best to replicate the magic that you usually bring.
You know he's not listening to this, right?
I know. He won't. He won't listen to it. No. He doesn't listen to any episodes that he's not on.
He doesn't listen to any episodes, period.
I can say whatever I want.
You could say whatever you want. Actually, you know what? If I leak to him that you said something bad about him, he will probably go listen to it. So
you should just tell him that happens on every episode he's not on.
I should do that. All right. Last but not least, he was going to be one of our Foo Crew for my birthday celebration in North Carolina. But, well, we know how that turned out. So here comes my hero. And no, it's not the Andrew McMahon who is in the wilderness. It's my buddy here in Florida, Andrew McMahon. How are you, buddy?
I'm living the dream. Living the dream. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right, so you're recording this on your back porch, I can tell.
That's correct. So I am somewhat in the wilderness. I've got the beard, I've got the I've got the chops out here.
Yeah. And you are a hunter.
That is correct.
So I guess
And I hail from the same place as you and Wayne both. I mean, it's the great state of Washington.
Me too.
Well, Jeff, you are always claiming that you're from Montana, though.
No, I moved to Washington in sixth grade. So I went sixth grade through high school.
Okay.
And lived there some post college. I lived there long enough that that's a home. I Montana and Washington are two places I consider home. I feel like my formative years were in Tacoma.
It was enough to turn you into a Mariners fan, but not enough to turn you into a Seahawks fan.
I already liked the 49ers by the time I moved up there, man. Yeah. And the Seahawks sucked when I got there. It was not good.
Well,
so
Seahawks
just never changed.
Seahawks are about to suck for the next couple of years, too. So
that's what happens when you trade a Hall of Fame quarterback, man.
That is. Oh. It is. It's painful. It's painful. All right. Well, premise of our podcast.
I also loved the Sonics. Let's not leave that out. RIP, R.I.P., baby.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not talk about that. All right, premise of our podcast, fairly simple. We talk about music, but as we do at the beginning of each episode, I ask the all-important question. Andrew, I'm going to start with you cuz Jeff is still feeding his face here for dinner. So what t-shirt are you wearing, Andrew?
You know, it's funny. I'm going to go with the wilderness theme. I have an Under Armour fishing t-shirt. I know you guys like to sport the traditional garb of the
rock t-shirts.
Concert t-shirt.
Yes.
Absolutely. I am more of the wilderness of the hunter fisher type. Got to keep the long sleeves to protect the from the UV. I'm very fair skinned, so for me it is the Under Armour fish.
Okay. Do you even own a rock t-shirt? I don't think I've ever seen you wear one.
I don't believe I do at the moment. I was going to, but unfortunately you mentioned how those plans turned out.
Are you XL?
Negative, Ghost Rider.
Oh, you're a large.
Yeah, if I buy one, it's usually a large.
Okay. We need to I think we need to rummage through Wayne's prospective Goodwill pile where he's only worn those t-shirts once, and we may need to give you a few of those.
Okay.
Do you like Mariah Carey? Because I know that
it's a loaded question.
Well, I gave him the Mariah Carey t-shirt for Christmas, and I know he's only worn it once, and it was only for the one episode.
But all he wants for Christmas is you.
This is true.
Well, we're singing about heroes. I think that's probably the wrong song on my playlist right there.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Jeff, what t-shirt are you wearing?
I am wearing my brand new Pearl Jam in the Gigaton font. It's the Pearl Jam Gigaton Tour short that I got Saturday night at the amazing Los Angeles Forum, the Great Western Forum. I will tell you, Ben, you and I went to Bon Iver, and we were complaining about their T-shirt game. Pearl Jam's was fantastic. There were three regular tour shirts that I was deciding between, and they had one that was specific to the event, and they had all four of them in 3XL, which never happens for
me.
Never.
Wow.
So there were you know, my boys went as well, and we all three got different T-shirts because they had so many cool designs. Very so. Cool. And the show was great, and it'll tie in. I'll mention a song a little bit later in this episode that ties into that particular concert. That's why I wore this tonight.
All right. Sounds like Justin Vernon needs to step up his merch game.
I think so. I've been a couple of times, and I don't enjoy the merch.
Well,
for the Bon Iver.
Yeah, if you go back and listen to our Bon Iver episode, we do talk about the merch game and how. I think the running joke that we had for that night was the people who designed it were failed art students.
Yeah, it's art school dropouts.
Art school dropouts. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Yeah, very artsy and, like, you know, just not appealing.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, I am sporting, because it is the 30th anniversary of one of the greatest albums to ever come out. I'm wearing my Black Crowes t-shirt. So, yeah.
You shaking your moneymaker?
I am shaking my moneymaker. So, and that's more of a shout out to Wayne, because I know that if he was on this episode, he would be gushing all about it, because it's one of his all-time favorites. So, there we go. All right. Well, let me get all the stuff out before we jump into this. So, I don't have a whole lot of notes for this particular episode, because we are going to talk about the Foo Fighters' Skin and Bones, which was released in November of 2006. We've really talked about nearly all of the songs that are on this particular album. There's a couple exceptions. We'll talk about those as we get to it. And if you want to hear our analysis on some of the lyrics, you know, maybe go back to the archives and listen to some of those records. So I think we're really going to focus on how different the songs are on this album as opposed to what they originally sounded like on the originals. Andrew didn't have the benefit of being on any of those. So Andrew, if you've got some lyrical interpretations, have at it. We want to hear it. So there we go. And like I said, Jeff has a Kings hockey game to watch, so I know that he doesn't want this to be a marathon 2-hour episode.
No, it's so. I want this show to be done right. I want to do it well. I want to give it my 110%. You know, and treat this like any other show. I play them one game at a time, Ben. That's how I do it. Yeah, I got all the cliches, the sports cliches.
You have
in there.
All of them. Way to go, Nuke.
You know, it was interesting. I just watched that about 2 weeks ago again. It's I watched so good. That with my 20-year-old.
Okay, let's just stop there. So, I tell everyone that's the best baseball movie ever. Andrew, do you agree with that, or do you have another take for best baseball movie?
That's one of my all-time favorites right there. Susan Sarandon. Holy cow. That was a great play. I really like how she goes back and forth. It really is one of my favorites. The other one is the other Kevin Costner one that he comes out with John C. Reilly. Was that A Perfect Game? Is that one that was called?
For the Love of the Game.
Oh, For the Love of the Game. Sorry, yeah. those two movies are really really solid for me for baseball movies.
Yeah, Jeff.
I tend to always say the same thing, which is Eight Men Out. Eight Men Out is my favorite baseball movie. I love John Sayles, and I think it's great. But I think Bull Durham is probably my number two. I'm a huge fan of The Sandlot. Absolutely love The Sandlot.
Yeah.
Love Major League. I love The Sandlot because that's one I can watch with my kids too. That's always a big part of it. Major League is always good. And then Field of Dreams and The Natural. I mean, there's so many good ones. I love baseball movies.
And
love them.
And don't forget Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year. We watched that during the pandemic as well. It's just fun, man. It's just a baseball. You get any, give me a baseball movie and I'm going to give it a shot at least.
You know what movie I haven't watched in forever, which we were talking baseball movies on a client call for whatever reason. And one of the ladies on the call was like, don't forget League of Their Own. And I'm like, I haven't watched that. I haven't watched that in forever. I need to rewatch that, I think.
I do too. I had the same thought. I want to show that to my kids as well because I don't think they've seen it. So I want to watch that.
Yeah. All right.
Good times. Good times.
People,
man,
did not tune into this episode to hear us talk about baseball.
I know.
Movies. So let's get to it.
On this, on kind of what you were saying on this, I will tell you that I struggled a little bit to figure out, like, what's my criteria for scoring this? We've been scoring Foo Fighters songs. And you know, I mean, I kind of landed at some points where I think that songs that I hadn't really heard on other Foo albums probably got higher scores maybe than they would have otherwise. So, oh, here's a new thing. Songs that really, I think, are big reinterpretations where they really went all out on the arrangement or something is drastically different, scored a little higher for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so I definitely struggled to figure out what's my criteria to land scores on this, and I'll, you know, we'll go through it as we go, but I don't know if you had the same thing where it's like, I've already scored these songs, but
yeah, I think that had, I know for one song that definitely fit the criteria that it was like, well, it's not a song that we've talked about yet, so I scored it a little bit higher. Others were just how I liked what they did with the song in this particular setting. Cause it's, I don't know if you were, you would call this a, would you call this an unplugged? Cause it's not really unplugged.
It's not like an unplugged. It's an more of a, it is an unplugged vibe, but it's more orchestral than that. I kick myself all the time that I didn't go to one of these shows. You know, I was aware of them happening at the time. I should have gone to one. I didn't go. I really wish I'd have been there for one of these.
So they recorded this over three nights in August of 2006. And so you're not hearing, this is not just one concert. I mean, they culled the best of each of the shows and put this together.
In theory, I mean, you know, or one of the shows was most of it and they had some chunks they needed to switch in elsewhere. It's hard to know for sure, but they did do a three-night run, which is like what Wilco did with Kicking Television as well. They did three nights at the Vic and, you know, you end up with whatever they think are the best moments or, you know, however that works out. But this was at the Pantages Theater in L.A., which is, that's the show that, like, or the place that Hamilton is when it comes to town. And they do a regular season of musicals. That's typically, we don't have a lot of concerts at the Pantages. It's typically your bigger theater production.
So the Pantages was by the Funko Pop store that we went to the last time we were there. Right across
the street.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's exactly. I think Hamilton might have been there when you were here.
It was.
Or, I don't remember, but yeah, that's that venue. I've been there a number of times for those. I've never been to a concert there. I really wish I'd have gone to this one.
Yeah. Andrew, how did you get connected with this record?
I'm glad you asked because, strangely enough, when this came out, so what did you say the dates were on this when it first came out?
So November of 2006.
November of 2006, I was in the middle of Ramadi, Iraq. Okay, and the significance of this was I wasn't exactly sure or even aware that this album was even, you know, taking place, and so I don't know exactly when this landed on my lap, but I think it was somewhere in the beginning of 2007 that I got a hold of it. And So just a little bit of backstory, and I don't know how this relates to you guys or if you even care, but I ended up getting injured in Iraq. And, you know, this time in my life, it was really, really important kind of really important time for me, because, you know, music was something that I was listening to. And I really, you know, you said this isn't an unplugged album, but it really had that kind of vibe or feel.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed listening to this. And so many of the songs had these, you know, this lyrical value of these things that, you know, I was either going through or these things that I could identify with, of thinking about my experience that I had just gone through. Cause, my service overseas was interrupted, in March of 2007. And, I ended up getting plucked out of Iraq because of my injuries. And so, I ended up listening to this record quite a bit, and, you know, thinking about, reminiscing about my experience. And so a lot of these songs are just like, man, I can't even tell you how many times I listened to this back then. And so when you asked me on here to, hey, will you rate some of these songs? I'll tell you, it was really hard to do, for a lot of reasons. One, to rate the songs, and two, to go back and listen to them again, because it just, you know, it dredges up a lot of feelings and emotions. Music is just really beautiful because it has that ability to make you think about things that, you know, from when you were a kid, or, you know, the, you know, girlfriends that you broke up with, or that broke your heart, or, you know, whatever. This was a time in my life that I just, I really miss, because it was something that was, you know, it was when I was healthy. I wasn't disabled. It was friends that were still around, and I don't know what else to say. It's a lovely album, and thinking about what the guys that are in this band now are going through, you know, I can only imagine the things they go back and think about. So
did I give you any PTSD and having to go listen to this album again, or was this more of a comfort album for you?
Yeah, I'd say it was more of a comfort album. And I appreciated the opportunity to come back and you know, be a part of the show. I really love what you do. And, I went back and listened to some of the, like how you were rating some of your other, you know, some of your other songs and stuff, and how you were doing it. Looking how you guys were scoring, it's interesting how you kind of come to those conclusions. If you've already seen some of these songs on other albums, it's not easy just to throw them back up there again.
Well, and I do
love the way you set us up there, though, Andrew, where you're like, I don't know if you guys even care or not, but I was injured in Iraq. Like, how big a jerks do we have to be like, nah, that's not an interesting story. Thanks for sharing that, because that's the awesome thing about music, because it does have connections to places and times. And it gets you through events, and it gets you through things that, you know, when you're going through tough things, I have albums like that, that I remember the album that, you know, we're listening to at a particular time in our marriage when we're going through stuff, or, you know, those sorts of things that, you know, you bond over, or that heals, or whatever. And so that's the cool thing about music. And I can see where this, like you said, it does have that, it has the same feel of an unplugged, in terms of let's listen to these songs stripped down and a little bit mellower and differently, and I think it's a very cool vibe.
Yeah, I was asking about the PTSD portion, because a couple weeks ago we recorded an episode about the Cocteau Twins, and my ex-fiance was very big into it. The first time I re-listened to that album in over 25 years It did kind of give me a little PTSD. I got over it where I'm like, okay, now I'm having a different experience because I'm now scoring this. I'm going to be talking about this with Wayne and Kay Hanley. And so I was able to put that aside. But the first time I listened to it, I'm like, ugh, this is transporting me back to 94. That was not a great time period. I mean, there were some good things about it, but there was also, yeah, there was some crap that went along with it too. So, and the music can transport you back to the good and the bad as well. So I was just curious if I stirred any of those emotions for you, Andrew. So,
yeah, for the good and, you know, for the good, bad, and probably for the better.
Yeah. All right. So let me just kind of set this up. So the band is actually an 8-piece for this particular record. So besides the usual guys that we've talked about, Pat is back. You've got a violinist and singer, Petra Hayden. She is on a couple of these songs. You can hear her vocals, her female vocals for that. You've got Ramey Jaffe, who he is becoming more and more a part of the group. And he doesn't become an official member until, what, 10 years later, Jeff?
Yeah.
Is that what we determined?
I think it's about 10 years later. And Pat isn't actually back in the band again for a few years. He's just a touring.
Right.
He will tour with them at times. So.
Yeah. And then percussionist Drew Hester is also on this as well. So giving an extra deal. I did mean to go look at the track listing for the DVD. There is a DVD of these shows as well. There's 21 songs on the DVD. There's 15 on this particular record. So I meant to go look to see what the other 6 songs were. That DVD is actually directed by Danny Clinch, who we're going to hear. Mm-hmm. He plays harmonica for another round on this. You may know Danny. We've talked about Danny on some of the other episodes. He is known for doing a lot of these rock documentaries. He did a couple of the Pearl Jam documentaries. And
I can tell you real quick the differences. There's okay. There's an intro on the DVD, so that's one track.
Oh, that doesn't count then.
And it does not count. Yeah, so okay. Then you've got On the Mend is fourth. Yeah. That's not on. That didn't make this.
I don't need to hear that.
Still After Walking After You and Before Marigold.
Okay.
Is on there. Then you get See You After Another Round.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And then you also, I think the one that, and I have watched, I have the DVD and I have watched, I haven't watched it recently, but I think the one on here that they left off that I like the most is after Big Me is What If I Do.
I love that.
I kind of dig, I dig it on here too. I think it has a nice life on in this format. I think it was kind of made for this format. So that's the one that I think maybe the omission that I think could have been back on there.
Now I'm going to have to go find that, because if you remember, I scored that super high. I gave that my 18 when we
Yeah.
The rest of you guys gave it some crap scores and knocked it out of the top five.
I don't remember. Yeah, top five on a double disc. You know, like, what am I supposed
Wayne,
to do there?
Wayne gave
I
it gave a it, 6. You did give it a nine.
I think.
Yeah.
I gave it a 9.
Joe gave
on a
it
double
an
disc. I like this song a lot, and I think it's a nice. I think it's one that I was thinking of when we were talking about that particular album that I think really lent itself even better to this format.
Yeah.
And really rose well. And again, it's because I've seen it on the DVD.
Okay, so. Now I need to go check that out. All right.
Yeah.
Anything else? This was not super successful. It peaked at number 21 on the first week of its release, and that was it. I did see a note, they sold about 50,000 copies, which if you compare that to all of the other, I mean, most bands would kill to sell 50,000 copies of any record, but if you compare this to some of the other albums that they've released, of course, pales in comparison. And I only recently added this to my collection. I did not own this record until about 4 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why. I just never had it.
This was an instant add, and this is one I actually would like to. I assume that it's available on vinyl, but I've not tracked it down. This is one I wouldn't mind having on vinyl.
It is on vinyl.
I have not to grab that at this point, but I think it'd be one that I'd enjoy listening to on vinyl.
Yeah. All right. Shall we dive into it?
Yeah.
You guys ready? All right. So, as a reminder, our scores are based off a number of songs on this record. All right, Jeff, throw it to you. How many songs on this one?
Oh, this one has 15.
Which means top song is going to get 15 points, Nick's favorite, 14 points on down to Lee's favorite, gets one, and we're going to figure out what our top five is based off of our cumulative scores. We're going to kick this off with Razor. And so I found this interesting. I know I brought this up on the In Your Honor episode. On that particular record, Razor is the very last song, which we kind of didn't like the sequencing of that. So now you've got sequencing, and this becomes first song on the record. I'm looking at scores. Andrew, I don't think you like our the sequencing of this either, right?
No, not so much. Though, actually, you know, for an intro song, I mean, if you're, I would maybe start with something a little stronger. But I mean, it's all right. I think for an acoustic set, it's probably apropos. It's kind of setting the tone for what the night's gonna be. So I actually don't really have a problem with it. I think it sets the tone. Though I didn't hear the intro, so Jeff might have more better take on what was actually going
on.
Well,
I mean, I don't remember the intro on the DVD necessarily being much different than what's this. like I said, I think it's kind of a throwaway probably, but I actually kind of like this as an opener. I don't score it super high. It's not my favorite on there. I think this is a song that lends itself really well to this setting. But I do think this kind of is a good, like, hey, here's what the night's going to feel like. And it's got the cool, like, back and forth guitar thing going on. That it starts quiet and builds a little bit. And it's not an album where I think you want them to come out and go heavy right off the bat, because you need to build to something anyway. And you start out with one of the bigger songs in a night like this, and a lot of stuff is going to feel like it falls flat.
Yeah. I echo what you guys say. I do think that this is a good indicator of what the rest of the night is going to be. I think that's their way of saying, if you're expecting us to go, you know, times like these really hard, This is not your evening.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Scores. This is my five. Andrew?
I got a one.
Okay.
But again, I mean, that's just from my appeal.
Right. Jeff?
Six. I'm a six on this.
Okay. All right. Next song is Over and Out. This was song number six on disc two of In Your Honor. Also did not make our top 10, or I'm sorry, did not make our top five on that episode. I'm looking at scores over there, and you, Jeff, you and Wayne didn't score this very high over there. And are you keeping your low score consistent? Is that what you're trying to do here?
It's not what I'm trying to do. I made a point not to look at how I scored things before when I listened to this.
Gave it a three.
Huh? On the other one. And again, yeah. I like this one on there too. This is the one I think that I told you when I heard it before. I thought this was about fatherhood, and once I realized he hadn't had kids, then it just didn't do anything for me. As soon as when I thought he was singing about, like, he's got restless little one, comfortable enough, you know, all those sort of things, I was like, oh, this is him holding his baby in his arms for the first time. And once that illusion was broken for me, I was like, ah, it's fine. Doesn't score high for me on this one either.
Did we establish that you're not a big Pink Floyd fan?
No, I love Pink Floyd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I you made that comparison before. I guess I kind of hear it, but and I don't dislike it. There's only one song on this album that I don't like it. I don't like it. My number one when we get there, I do not like it.
You and I are in agreement.
Are we? Are we? Yeah. I've not looked ahead yet, but I don't like it. I don't like what they did, and so I like this song, even though this is just my two. But I think this lends itself really nicely to this night as well. When they build up to the orchestral stuff, I think it's a nice version, a nice arrangement.
Yeah. Andrew, anything on Over and Out?
No, I mean, I've got it as two as well, but I mean, I don't really have anything to add.
All right. So I gave it I'm looking at my score and I'm like, did I really give it my 10? I gave it my 10.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I liked it. I liked it on In Your Honor. I like it here. I think the live setting adds a little something to it. I'm clicking over to
your In Your Honor score, and out of 20, you only gave it your 8. So it rises for you on this one. You like
I like this version.
I do think that this is a good arrangement for it.
Yeah. All right.
You got to use the cough button. That's in radio. We use a cough button for that, Ben.
I don't have a cough button.
Oh, no. Sorry. Maybe for your birthday, I'll get you a cough button.
It's called editing. It's called editing. I've been fighting allergies all day and
COVID.
Had a little bit of a... Well, maybe.
I don't know.
No, I had a little bit of a... I overdid it yesterday for the diabetes thing, so... It's probably the second worst day that I've felt since I got diagnosed. So, yeah.
You made me think of Wilford Brimley when you said that.
Oh yeah, got the sugars.
Got the diabetes.
I got the diabetes. Yeah. All right. Walking After You is next, and I know that this scored high for us on the original episode that we did. So this is on Color and the Shape. Didn't track really high for me. I didn't really like this version.
I don't either.
Very much. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate it.
I don't like
my one, but this is my two.
I prefer the version on Color and the Shape for sure.
Yeah.
This one, it seems just sort of sleepy, and you're now three songs into it. And I understand that you don't want to rock right away, but this one starts to feel a little sleepy at this particular point.
Yep.
So this is my three.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm at a four. I mean, I really don't have much to add. It's kind of, it's interesting, you know, the tenor of how it, the concert's kind of progressing, and it is very much an acoustic set at this point, and something is building, which it's pretty sweet as you start to come in. And you know, I don't want to, you know, put the cart before the horse, you know, as I think you're gonna, as you move on to song number four here, it's your guys' scores are gonna be indicative of what happens next.
Yeah.
I think it's a slow burn at this point, but something cool is happening.
Yep. Yep. All right. What's your score on this one?
For me, for what, Walking After You or for?
Yeah. For Walking After You.
Oh, it's a four. Sorry. Yeah.
So that leads us to fourth song, which is Marigold. I threw this out on the socials today and only one person got it. But I was listening to my heart-shaped box Nirvana CD single, because Marigold is one of the B-sides on that.
Yeah.
And I kind of threw that out. I'm like, I'm listening to Nirvana to prepare for Foo Fighters. Why? And only one person got it. And he was like, you must be doing Skin and Bones, because that's a Dave Grohl song. So Dave does do the vocals on Marigold. I think that my score is probably higher just because it was newish.
It affected my score, but I also really like this song.
I do too.
I like this song and I like this version of it. I did go back and listen to the Nirvana, a couple of them, the demo version and one of the other versions as well. He had this, he put this out on that cassette tape he did under the faux name of Late, or the pseudonym of Late. It was on that, I think it was called Pocket Watch.
Yes.
And it has a few things on there, like, that has Friend of a Friend, and, it's the precursor to that first album.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was called Color Pictures of a Marigold. It was one that he wrote in, I think, 92 or something like that. And they recorded, and this is the one Nirvana song that Foo Fighters have covered. And it's really cool. And fun fact, I saw this played the very last time that it was played live. When I was looking at Setlist FM today, I saw them at a little show. They played a little show at Paladino's in Encino.
You're flexing again. You're doing the flex thing. Okay.
Hey, you're pulling back the curtain right now. You're saying again, because last night we recorded an episode that doesn't come out till after this one, and you're messing up the chronology now.
Look,
people are going to be confused now.
No. You screwed up the last two times that I've tried to pull.
But the point is, I saw Marigold, and that in 2010, that's the last time they played it, I found on Setlist. And Chris Novoselic came out and played it with them at this little dive bar in Encino. And it was awesome. And I'd obviously heard it on Skin and Bones at that point. But that definitely kind of made me – I have a kind of a little bit of a attachment to it for that too. But I think it's a cool little song.
Flex. Okay. Yeah. Andrew.
I like the song, but I still have it scored low at a 5 because still – The album's building up, I'm waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
But I do like the song a lot.
I will say I do like the B-side of the Nirvana CD single version more, but I will take this. I like it too.
I like this better than the Nirvana version. I think
really?
This is a, okay. Yeah, I do. I think at that time he was trying to sound like he had written a song for Nirvana. And I think this is probably closer to the sentiment of the song or the feel of the song that he really wrote. But at the time he's trying to look like I'm writing Nirvana songs. And
yeah,
so I like this one a little bit better. I kind of dig that Nirvana version though too. And this is my 10. I have it as a 10. And I think some of that is the newness of it.
Yeah. And this is my 9. And now we're going to start getting cooking because My Hero is next. Of course, this is on Color in the Shape. And we all track this pretty high. And the version is great on this one as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Really cool. Really cool arrangement of this. This is one where they first start to really light it up of like, hey, here's a song that you know, but it's going to feel different. And the orchestral parts of it really build nicely. So this one scored high for me in great part due to the fact that like you give me something different with it. You gave me something that I normally like to hear Taylor rock out at the beginning with that drum build. And this is a different build and the guitars provide a lot of that build in this song. It's almost like a dueling guitars kind of feel at one point.
Yeah. Andrew, what you got on this one?
Yeah, I've got it ranked the same as Jeff at 11. I really like the way that it that he starts the verse at the beginning. Same way. I think the build. I think this is what they were going for. The first four songs kind of brings it to this, to where you actually have the concert really kicking off, and this is where the people are. This is kind of the payoff, and then you're into the second act of the show.
Yeah.
You definitely announce the presence of like, okay, let's get it rolling.
That's it. Yeah. Now that everybody's in their seats because they, they were stuck in LA traffic or whatever for the first three songs, which it could be a very true statement.
Oh, could be 100% true.
Yeah.
Or I will say at the food trucks.
Right. Which we didn't have to hurry.
No, because they waited for everybody at the food trucks at that concert.
I know. Sorry, we're doing a call back to our Bon Iver episode. There are four songs off of Color and the Shape on here. So we've already talked about two of those. The majority is from In Your Honor. There's six songs from In Your Honor. So we are going to talk about more In Your Honor, which makes sense because it was during that time period when it came out.
Yeah, and a lot of those songs on In Your Honor, you know, the whole second CD was written for a venue like this, you know?
Right. So that leads us to next year, which is the lone song off of There Is Nothing Left to Lose on this album. That was in our top five. It was ended up fourth, but for this particular album, does not even sniff our top five.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised. Are you not surprised that more songs off of There Is Nothing Left to Lose didn't make this? Because I think there's a few more songs on that. That was a mellower album as well, where I think that there were some songs they left off of that in favor of In Your Honor that I think might have been an improvement. I think Aurora would have been an improvement in particular.
For sure.
I think, you know, I would have been curious about, like, I learned to fly. I think he hates the song, so I think that's it. But there's a couple of songs on there that I think would have been interesting. Aurora is, to me, the biggest song missing on this one.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they didn't do like a different version of Generator, for instance. Just do like a 180 and just do something completely different. I could totally see them doing like MIA in this setting. But they didn't. Nope. We've got the one song next year. Andrew, what do you got on next year?
Got an eight.
I'm matching your eight. Jeff, what you got?
I'm at a seven, but I think this venue definitely lends itself well to this song. I like this version of the song, although it's not particularly reinvented. It's a pretty faithful, just live version.
Yeah, because it's already a stripped down type of song anyways. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This leads us up to another song from In Your Honor, which is Another Round. And I'm looking at the score, so I'm just going to throw this over to Andrew.
Yeah, I really like this. For me, everything about this, the composition of this song, this ranked the highest for me off this album. You know, the harmonica, the whole way this song came together, I was really surprised when I saw your guys' scores. I thought maybe I was listening to a different song than you guys.
That happens. That happens sometimes, man.
It happens. Well, it happens.
And for me, again, this one had sentimental value. I was looking at, I think top four, top five songs. I think largely had sentimental value. And I think that, again, coming from the perspective of listening to this album, I think if, you know, if I scored this album, listening to this album on a different day, I might have scored it differently. But coming off of the day that I did when I listened to it, I scored it, you know, pretty sentimentally, and that's how I felt about this song.
Well, Kay Hanley even mentioned, she was like, do you guys ever do Records Revisited, where you have guests come on and revisit their scores because you may have caught them on a weird day when they scored it? And I'm like, Wayne and I have actually talked about revisiting some of those records just because of that, and seeing if our scores have changed because of a new experience or what have you. It's all subjective, so yeah, I get it.
I will tell you, I think what drags this down on my score here, because again, I like this song. I like this version of the song. I think it's really, and again, the harmonica is great. Danny Clinch on harmonica. And I think it would have scored higher for me if it were higher in the set. I think the set placement for this is the first time that I feel like coming off of that bigger version of My Hero, like you said on My Hero, Andrew, where it feels like he really launched the show a little bit there, and the next year kind of carries that. Another round slows us way back down, and then we're going to dive into a couple songs that pick it back up. So it feels a little bit disjointed at the placement, and I think it affected my score.
Well, I was just being consistent, so I gave it a 2 on our In Your Honor episode. So I'm like, nah, I'm giving it a 2 for here too.
What did I give it on the? I don't think I.
You didn't track it very high on that one. You gave it a 4 on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that! You were.
Consistent. I'm duplicating that too. I guess I'm a 4 here.
Yeah, you're being consistent.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm ready to rock a little harder than this at this particular point of the show. I think that's where it lands.
Okay. That leads us to Big Me, which is the only song off of the self-titled debut album. That finished 3rd in our scoring for that episode, if you recall, Jeff. I think you tracked it higher than... Yeah, you did track it higher than Andrew and I.
I had it pretty high. I think I had it as my 2nd on that episode too. Yeah, I had it behind I'll Stick Around. I'll tell you this. I think this goes back to what I said at the beginning about my scores were impacted by if they really did something different on a song and I loved it. I love the arrangement on this song. I think this is just not better than the original, but a nice companion piece to the original in terms of they didn't just trot that out here and do a live version. It is just a really cool with the, I think that's Petra doing treating it like a duet is, right. I think, what really drove it up the chart for me. I think it's a fantastic male-female duet that gets going. It almost sounds like the love song quality comes out of it in a way that doesn't on that on that self-titled album.
And it's a much better female-male duet than, say,
Virginia Moon. Yeah. And again, there's nothing wrong with the vocals in that. It's just not my song. That bossa nova thing didn't work. I'm glad they're not doing Virginia Moon here, and I'm glad they're doing this. But this sounds like a song that was meant to be a duet all of a sudden. Yeah. And you're like, wow, that's what a cool addition to this song.
I feel bad for my score.
This, and heavy piano, very, very heavy piano on it. A lot of keys.
Ramey. Shout out to Ramey.
Yeah.
This probably should have been my 10. I gave Over and Out a 10, and I give this one my 7. I hate my scores.
I think that's a little low. They really put the work into making this song different in a good way.
And I did not reward them for that work.
I gave this a 12. So what is that? My 4th favorite, 3rd favorite? How do numbers work?
Yeah,
my 4th favorite. Okay.
Yeah, Andrew.
Yeah, you know, this was a 9 for me. It was really close between this one and Times Like These for number 10. I did like this song quite a bit. It's funny going back to when you guys were. The episode in which you guys originally were talking about this with the gentleman that
Barrett Jones.
Yeah, there you go. And I do remember you guys talking about the lyrics are they're kind of nonsensical in their approach, and so much of the harmonizing, it's just so lovely that, like you said, Jeff, it's amazing that it's not a love song because they've done so well with it in making that piece just really come together. It really is really nice. And I kind of want to comment on that previous episode too, is that Smashing Pumpkins album or that music video that they lost to, What was it? Tonight, I think is what it was they lost
to.
You can begrudge them, but man, that was an awesome video that they lost to. But this song is still, it's a great song. Again, as a standalone piece, this really was a really good one. And going back to how this album didn't do better, it's both an anomaly and a head scratcher, because you get to a song like this, and I can't really see how more stations didn't give this airplay. Granted, I was out of the country, but I can't see why this didn't sell better.
I don't recall any versions of this, of the songs on this album, getting any airplay. I just don't think they did.
I don't remember if they released them as singles that way, or if I don't know if I just wasn't listening to radio at that point already. It's hard to say, but it is funny that you bring up the music video, because when you consider that Big Me is the Mentos commercial song, for them to take it to that, and again, like we talked about on this album, it's kind of silly and light and throwaway, and they make it sound so substantive in this arrangement. That's what drives it over the top for me. So,
yeah,
it's my 12.
Okay, Andrew, your score?
I think I said I was a 9.
All right, this is my 7, which should be my 10. All right, that's my first I hate my score comment. Cold Day in the Sun. So now we get a little Taylor action, and this finished in our top 5 for the In Your Honor episode. I think it finished 4th. Now it's my turn to do the math. I think it finished 4th for that.
Well, and episode. I think Joe had it as his number 1. I think
he did.
Yeah.
He did, actually. Yeah.
I think it finished at 2, didn't it, for us or not? I don't remember.
Fourth overall.
Fourth overall.
Yeah, okay. Fourth overall. Yeah.
I love that this version exists. I love that there's a good live recording. This was always a highlight of shows. When Taylor would come out and do this song anyway, it's again, I think, as I mentioned on the In Your Honor episode, I don't know if my score is affected by his recent passing or not. I just know that I love this version. I think it's pretty faithful, but it's awesome. And it really, I need to go back now and watch the DVD performance, because I have that now on DVD, to where I can always watch a Taylor performance. But the way he struts, he has this this cool sort of peacock vibe when he would get out from behind the kit, you know.
Yeah.
But he really relished the moment and performed, and was just, it was fantastic. It was always fantastic to see. He did it on Queen.
What did we see at the Love Ride one? Was that Tie Your Mother Down?
I don't remember now. I'd have to look up that set list too. But so my story from this one is Saturday night at Pearl Jam. You know, Eddie does a little tribute, talks about Taylor. Talks quite a bit about Taylor, and then Matt Cameron comes out and performs "Cold Day in the Sun" in Taylor's honor. He and Taylor were good friends. Chad Smith is playing tambourine in the background. And it was just a nice moment. It was one of the highlights of that show Saturday night. And it was emotional. You could tell that there's a lot of crossover in the fandoms. And you could tell that the audience just absolutely, it blew them away. I loved the moment. I'm glad I got to see it. It was a nice tribute.
Matt was out of tune for the first verse.
Sure. Yep. He's a drummer.
You could tell he was a little nervous.
I don't think it's an easy song to sing though either.
No,
you know, I mean,
no,
I think it's not. Yeah, but yeah, I think he seemed a little like the moment was big, and that was their third show of the tour, and it didn't pop up until then. So I'm guessing he worked on it a little bit. But it was a great moment. It was a really nice moment.
Yeah, I appreciated you sharing the video you took of that. So
yeah, I recorded it specifically for you. So
that was, yeah, I appreciate that. Andrew, anything on Cold Day in the Sun?
Yeah, I went and I pulled the video to watch it, because I wanted to see how I thought I heard that he switched places with Dave, and Dave played the drums while he sang it. Well, the video I watched for Skin and Bones was Taylor was still on the set playing and singing, and Dave was jamming on the guitar. Now, gotcha. my son plays the drums, and I can tell you, it is not easy to play the drums and sing at the same time.
Yeah,
it's insane. And watching him do it is just it's incredible. Because I mean, now these guys are just, you know, they're pros, and they're incredibly skilled at their craft. They, you know, it's what they do, and they've been doing it for so long. And, you know, I did my best to make sure that there was no bias in my score. I really don't think there was, because
we're all about bias in scores, though, Andrew. So it's okay if you did it.
I really don't think there was. I really love this song. I just think lyrically it sounds good. I appreciation for, you know, watching what he was doing. I think it's a really beautiful number. I really like the sound of the whole thing. I gave it a 14 because I think it's a really good song right in the middle of the set. I think it's, you know, the show has peaked, and it's, you know, it's all kind of downhill from there.
Yeah. Jeff, your score?
I'm a 14 as well. This is my second favorite on here.
Okay, it's my 11. All right, that leads us to title track. The song, you can find the studio version on the EP from Five Songs and a Cover, which was, I guess, sold at Best Buy, and I didn't even know that it existed until we started doing research for this album, or for this episode. You can find some copies out there. There's not many copies out there, so if you're going to buy it on eBay, it's going to cost you $8 to $10. So, there you go. Didn't track very high for me. It's okay, but I think I'm coming down from Cold Day in the Sun. And again, we've said this a lot on these episodes about sequencing. The sequencing of going from Cold Day in the Sun to Skin and Bones. I don't know. It lost something for me, I think.
Do you think it would lose something for you always, or does it lose something for you right now?
I don't know. That's a great question. I
wonder that same thing, because again, I Cold Day is a, you know, has an emotional pull right now. And so Skin and Bones maybe feels a little lighter from that. But when you're just seeing it in the context of a show, I like this song. I think it scored a little higher for me again because of the newness factor. It's not a song we've been dealing with a lot. But I also think there's a lot of fun stuff going on. I really like the accordion in it. I like the keys in it. I think that there's almost sort of a, not just in the title, but in the feel, there's this sort of almost an Oingo Boingo kind of quality to it. That I kind of dig. Okay. It starts to feel like a, you know, like a Halloween party at some level, you know, and I just kind of dig what's going on. It seems kind of playful, and it's got a little bit of a spooky quality to it. I just dig it. I think it's a cool song.
Yeah. All right. I do have something to bring up, which is probably, I want to see what your guys' opinion of this. So this particular song is actually the most listened to song on Spotify for this album at 20.6 million listens. The next highest is Times Like These at 18.9 million. I thought that was interesting, considering that this is not exactly the known song on this album, and yet it has the most listens.
But it's also the title track and not readily available on anything else. So if you're listening for it, I could see it maybe rising up for that reason. How high is Marigold, I guess, for instance, I guess would be the other question.
Marigold, let me go look. Marigold is 4.7 million.
Okay, so it's not that high.
No.
I like the musicality of this song. And it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like there's horns on here as well. I don't know if that's true. I don't remember seeing, were there horns?
Did the USC marching band come in for this song?
I don't know. I don't.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
kidding,
no, I know, but I don't see any horns. But it almost seems like it's, I don't know. Like I said, Oingo Boingo. I get a little Oingo Boingo, okay. Boingo out of it.
Andrew, anything on this one?
No, I mean it. I've got it ranked as a 3.
Okay.
I mean, it was not terrible, but it was, again, it just probably the same as you guys said, coming off the last song. It's just like, you know, coming down after that. But I really think the rest of the album finishes really strong coming off of that.
Okay. All right. I'm matching your 3, Jeff.
And I'm a 9.
It's way too high.
It might be. Like I said, I told you. I think the newness is part of the reason.
Yeah.
But I also don't have many things that I ranked in a way that I'm like, I'm super upset about how low they are. So I like the whole album except for one song.
Okay. All good. February Stars is next. And that's another song off of Color in the Shape. I love the ending of this song. I don't really like my score. I just felt like... I even listened to the Color in the Shape version because I know that it does kind of take forever to get to the ending part, which I really love.
Yeah.
I just felt like the beginning part of this really does drag a little bit more than the studio version for me.
Agreed.
Once it gets to the ending, I really love the ending, but it's a slow burn.
Yeah, the ending is what scored it a little bit higher as well for me. But I like this song better in the studio version for sure. Like without a doubt.
Me too.
I don't know what it is about it, but I just think it's a stronger song in the studio version.
Andrew, you had this ranked higher than Jeff and I.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the way the album is put together. I like the song. I got it at a 7.
Okay.
I have it really high on Color in the Shape. I have that all the way up at like a 9, I think. So I really like the studio version of this. You had it as a 10, Ben. So we both had it very high on Color in the Shape. But I just think it's stronger on Color in the Shape.
Yeah, I agree. It's my 4. Jeff.
It is my 5.
Okay. And that leads us to Times Like These, which is the lone song off of One by One. And I really do dig this version of it. I gave it the highest score out of all of us. I gave it my 14. I think it's strong. I like the arrangement of it. I don't know if I like it better than the studio version, but I like both of them for what they are. If that even makes any sense.
I agree with you. I don't like it better than the studio version, but I think this is a fantastic. It's another one where they did a great. They worked the arrangement on this one, and this is the end of the set. This is the closer for the first set, and it's a strong closer. And they do a really good job with it. It almost gets a little bit of a country vibe. Or Americana vibe that I don't always hear in the studio version. That's really, really super cool.
Yeah, you know, I like that. You know, you get that emotional feel out of it, which I think is, you know, when you listen to a song, that's what you really, I'm sure as an artist, that's probably what you're really hoping for, is something that's going to connect with your audience. This is definitely a song that's got that's got that appeal, and on an acoustic level. Certainly, as the song slows down, you got the acoustics out. This song, I think, really gets a hold of you. real easy to reminisce about things. I mean, I got it as a 10. It definitely could have been higher. It's, you know, when you've only got so many numbers that you can assign to songs, I can only give it what I can give it. But
yeah. And this one has a really cool Mellotron part in it as well. That it sounds almost like a theremin, which is, it just sounds super cool and adds a different dimension to it that I haven't heard before. So this is my 13.
I'm listening to it in my headphones, and I'm like, I could totally see like American Aquarium or Drive By Truckers doing a version of this.
Sure, I could see Wilco doing a version of this
arrangement.
I could see Wilco. I could see Drive By Truckers. But it does have that Americana vibe to it, which I don't hear normally. And then it also sort of like slows down and then builds back up with again, I think our accordion. I think it gets going with accordion or violin. That's violin.
Okay.
But yeah, and then it starts to really drive again through the ending. The one that I think is missing from One by One that I would have liked to have heard on this was Disenchanted Lullaby. I think that would have been a cool addition to this set.
Well, you and I both gushed on that song.
Yeah, I think that's that, one that would have been. This one in particular, though, the version of this, it really gets into an instrumental just jam at the end. And for like an unplugged album to go like full jam the way it does is pretty cool. That's a different thing that you don't hear on a lot of the other arrangements.
Yeah, for sure. I gave this my 14. Did I get scores from everybody? Andrew, what was yours?
Yeah, I 10.
Okay.
Jeff, 13 on me.
Okay. So is this the... I was trying to listen to the last three tracks. The last three tracks are just Dave, right?
Well, until the end of the last track.
Okay.
The end of the last track, it picks back up and kicks into a full-throated, you know... If I remember right, again, it's been a long time since I've watched this. I think the other people start to kind of sneak back out on stage for the end of that, and then it goes bombastically big again, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. All right, so Friend of a Friend is next. That tracked fairly high on... That was like... ended up being fifth in your honor, right?
Yes, I think so.
That was in our top five. High. Yeah, it was in our top five. Written about...
It was really high for me. That was... I think it was like my 18 on that. It's one of my favorite on there.
You did give it an 18. I gave it a 17.
Yeah. I do not like it quite as well on here. I like the produced version better for whatever reason. I don't know why. I just dig it better. It still ranks high. It's an 8.
Yeah, so my only note was I feel like the studio version is more emotional than this one.
Agreed.
But I still like this version a lot. And Andrew, I think that you're agreeing with me on based off a score.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know you guys have already gone through the lyrics and stuff. I don't really have anything to add other than, you know, listening to it, him on stage by himself. That's, I don't know, all those elements. Again, it's where it's at in the concert. I don't know. For me, the whole album as a whole, I don't know if you guys do this with every episode, but with all the albums, it seems like the album is almost as if it's a song by itself, because you know the way it's composed, you know, they're taking everything out of their whole catalog. And they're composing it in a way that it's, you know, they're trying to formulate something that's, you know, different, because they're composing it in a different way that doesn't look like, you know, their other studio songs. Yeah. So that's, you know, to me, it's, you know, you're, you know, your rankings are different than they have been on your other albums. You know, what do you do with that? To me, when I look at these, it's, you know, I'm ranking these in order of both how they sound, but also how it kind of flows with the album itself. So to me, this song, it's really good on its own merits, but I think it also works with kind of what's happening with the rest of the album. But I really like the song, especially what it means lyrically. You know, about I think this is about Kurt. I mean, unless there's something that I don't know about.
No, it is. Yep. Your score?
13.
Okay. Jeff?
8.
Okay. Not matching Andrew's 13. Which leads us to Best of You. So I'm gonna ask Andrew's opinion first, and then Jeff and I will chime in. Andrew, your score and what you think about this version.
Yeah, I think it's I think I actually like this better than the studio.
Woo.
Yeah, I know. I just I don't know. You guys maybe feel differently, but to me, I really like Dave's voice on this. I like how it kind of caps off the album, or it's supposed to. It sounds like you know, the audience is going to call for an encore, and that's exactly what they're going to get. But this is, you know, the send off of the concert. And I think he really delivered. He saved his vocals for this song.
All right. Counterpoint, Jeff.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. This is my favorite song on In Your Honor. You ranked it top. I ranked it top.
Yep.
This is my least favorite song on here. I hate listening to him scream through this. I think the audience, you know, they're definitely into it. They're singing along, and I get it. They've heard, you know, an hour and 40-minute acoustic set, and they're ready to rock a little bit. But I just didn't – it doesn't work for me at all. His voice doesn't hold up to the screaming without all the other instruments, I think. I just think there's a better version of this song he could have done, or there's a better song to put in this spot that, you know, I don't know. I think that the audience is a little bit ready to rock, but this song just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I don't like his vocal performance on this one.
I don't at all.
Yeah,
it's almost White Limo-esque to me.
Ooh,
I just don't like it. It sounds screechy. It's a better song. I you know, it sounds like a, you know, if I didn't know this was Dave Grohl and someone just played it for me, I'd be like, who is this trying to cover Best of You? You know, that's how I would feel about it. I'd be like, who is this trying to cover? Like, they cannot do Dave Grohl. That's what I would say. I would have rather heard this be one that they kick back in and put the band back in behind it if you want to go a little heavier. I know it's been a little bit of an unplugged show, but you have some songs that went a little heavier. So just kick in and don't do this just on the guitar.
Kudos for doing something different, but
sure.
it didn't work for me.
And with that, I yield.
Yeah, no, I'm fine. Obviously, the audience enjoyed it at the time. I mean, they were all
into it, and yeah.
And it
maybe,
has.
I mean, maybe you had to, like, be there. Maybe you had
just
to be
I
there.
Just opened up the Spotify list too, and this is like the fifth most played song on there, above the last song, which is very fascinating to me. The last song, it doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either.
It's a lower number.
Yeah, I don't get it.
So did we get scores on this one or not yet?
Andrew?
6.
Don't be ashamed of your 6. Just don't feel bad if Jeff and I are poo-pooing on it.
Look, I didn't like. In the future, when we do the episode about Wasting Light, I will not like White Limo, and Brian will score it a 5. So, you are the one who messed with the timeline tonight, man. This is time travel 101. You know, okay. you messed with
all
it
right.
tonight.
I did. But it was more of a preliminary strike because I knew you were going to pull that crap on me.
So no, I actually wasn't tonight. I was going to mess with you by not pulling it.
Oh, you're full of it. You're so full.
I know. No, I know. I give this a one. This is my one. The only song on this album I do not like. I don't like it.
Yep, mine too.
If Dave is listening, I don't like it.
All right. Well, so now we're going to finish this up with, at least for me, my top song. I love, and we've already talked about this. We talked about this on the Color and the Shape episode. I love all versions of Everlong. I love the studio version. I loved it when they stripped this down. You've got the stripped down version for this. It's just fantastic. I just love it. All right, that's it.
Yeah. This is my favorite Foo Fighters song. I'm almost certain. It might get a run when I actually start listening to them back to back for the whatever the last episode is where we do our top 10. Maybe it gets a run from Aurora. Maybe it doesn't. But I think this is my favorite Foo Fighters song. This is a great version. We already knew it was a good acoustic from the Stern performance, and that got played forever. But this has a different dynamic even than that. This isn't just Dave. Dave comes out and does it like, okay, this is Dave and his guitar, but you've seen this before, and so I'm going to end this show with the big orchestral flourish and the other people coming back in to build on this, which is just a fantastic dynamic and a great way to end the show. As good as Times Like These was to end the first set, this is even better to end the whole show.
Agree. Andrew?
Yeah, I think this is my favorite song by Foo Fighters. I don't have it as the highest on this album, but I can't disagree with anything that you say, and I think it is the perfect song to end the concert on.
Yeah.
It flows so well. And, you know, to hear the crowd, I mean, what a great way to finish.
Yep. All right. My 15, Jeff.
My 15 as well.
Andrew.
My 12.
Okay.
12.
It's all good. Number one.
So we were lockstep on our top and our bottom one, Ben.
Yes, we were.
So that's our top song overall, yeah?
That was our top song overall. Second was Cold Day in the Sun. Average score of 13 for that. We have Times Like These finished third with 12.33. And then we've got a tie for fourth and fifth, which is My Hero and Friend of a Friend. Which,
all right.
I'm good with that top five.
Yeah, it's a great top five.
I know we knocked out another round out of the top five for you, Andrew. Sorry.
Oh, all right.
We would have had to do a lot of really high scores to get that up there.
Yeah, I don't think that one was ever going to.
No, it was not. To make it fair. No,
I think my only one that I feel like is missing from that top five is Marigold. I really dig Marigold on here.
Okay,
but that's a good top five. That's more of a typical Foo Fighters top five.
Yeah. So, Andrew, I've been asking all of the guests that have come on. So, is this your favorite Foo Fighters record?
You know, it's a toss-up between this and The Color and the Shape.
Okay. Got another vote for Color and the Shape, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Put that on that. Do you have another column on the Toto board that we can add Color and the Shape votes to? Or
no, not really. Yeah, I'm not really scoreboard watching these days.
All right.
Yeah. Maybe we should ask Andrew because Andrew's been listening for a while. Andrew, Toto. Oh, Toto's Africa, good or bad song?
It's great. Great.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Just see the way it made him smile.
I did see that smile.
Wayne, if you're listening, and you're not, Andrew's eyes smiled the second that Ben said Toto's Africa. He didn't even have to get all the way to good or bad song. They smiled because it makes him happy.
I knew. They sparkle. You know what? I'm gonna let you in on a secret. Okay, my 12-year-old son. Well, he's 14 now. He's 14. He's not 12. He's always going to be 12 to me. He's 14. my 14-year-old son, okay, I've got him on the Toto train, okay. He's all about Africa, okay. So that comes up, he's on it. He likes it. So
very good,
nice,
very good.
It's a wonderful song.
It is. All right, let's wrap this up. As a reminder, find all of our old episodes. Go to recordsrevisitedpodcast.com. You can find us on the socials, Twitter, at Podcast Records, Facebook page. Just search for Records Revisited Podcast there. Wayne is on the Instagram, except when he's in Mexico, because he's not updating anything there. Make sure you go and subscribe and rate or review us. It's been a while since we've had a review out there on iTunes. So, or is it iTunes? No, I guess it's Apple Podcast now. So, definitely go leave us a review. And of course you can find us on Patreon as well. You can get episodes early. If you can contribute at the guest revisor level, you can join us, to talk about one of your favorite records with us, or you can join us, like we've invited a few people to chat with Matt Nathanson or Caroline Spence or Alex Rosamilia from Gaslight Anthem. So go to Patreon.
Or Dave Grohl when he's going to be on it. You know, you don't know. You don't know.
You never know. You just never know.
I bet Dave would be cool enough. If you could get to him, Dave would be cool enough to actually do this. If you could get to him.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Tough. It's going to be really tough.
Well, so let me just throw this out. I think people in the Foos camp right now are just laying low.
Oh, and right now he's not doing it.
Why I said this, so we got Barrett Jones to come on the first episode. It got me all excited thinking, hey, I might be able to get some engineers and producers and maybe some other players from some of the other records to come on for some of these other episodes. I've reached out to a few people, crickets. Nobody is coming back to me. I even tried to invite Petra to come on for this episode. Nothing. So
I think the problem, Ben, is we recorded that first episode before it happened.
I know
it aired. Mm-hmm. It aired afterwards. So Barrett,
correct.
I bet Barrett wouldn't have come on after either. To be honest with you, because. The problem is you had this whole thing scheduled, and I've mentioned it when I've shared these on socials a few times. You scheduled this, you had this idea leading up to going to see the Foos. This is not a response to Taylor passing, but you didn't bail on it after Taylor passed. And so I think probably to people that you reach out to them, it might feel like it's like opportunistic or something right now, and they don't want to talk about it. And it would almost feel like someone might be trying to trade on it or something. And I know that's not what you're doing. Your listeners know, because you've told them that we started this beforehand. But I'm sure when you're reaching out to them right now, it's just got that weird vibe to them of like, yeah, I'm not going to go on a podcast and talk Foo Fighters right now on the heels of it.
No, I get it, and I think, I also wonder if some prospective listeners are not listening because of that, where they think we're being opportunistic, because there hasn't been an uptick in listeners from our normal Tuesday episodes, so.
From a bird's eye view, someone might look at it and go, oh, gosh, these guys are cashing in on this. And I could see it. It's the same way I feel when someone passes and all of a sudden you see like the Hits collection available, or a filmmaker passes or an actor passes, and all of a sudden theirs jump up on the iTunes rentals on there. And you're like, ugh, that feels gross. But, you didn't plan this. You're not doing this in response to it. It's not. But we had already started the project, and we had been listening to it, and then it ended up being kind of cathartic to be able to talk through it.
It has been. It has been. Definitely, for sure. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Andrew, thanks for jumping on with us. This was really fun.
You guys have me on. Let me talk about it.
Yeah, man. All right.
It was nice to meet you, Andrew.
Likewise.
Let's wrap this up. Andrew, if you've listened all the way to the end of some of the episodes, you know that we shout out at the end of it. You ready to do that?
Let's do it.
Okay. So thanks for listening. Please go support the arts. Go to a live show, buy a t-shirt of the band, or just buy a band t-shirt so that you can give it to Andrew. since he doesn't have any. Make sure you go visit a record store, and not just on Record Store Day. We are Records Revisited, and we are...
Go Kings, go.